Ashley, would you mind starting the recording for us and let us know once we're done? Thank you.
Recording has started. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Ashley. Well, welcome, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 5 Geographic Names at the Top Level call on the 28th of November, 2018. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. We have quite a few participants online. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you happen to be only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? Okay. Thank you. And as a reminder to all participants, if you would please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll hand the meeting back over to Olga Kovalev. Please begin.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good afternoon for me in a nice sunny day in Buenos Aires. Not very hot, not very cold. I hope that you are doing well, and thank you for joining us. We are going to start this call of WorldCard 5 meeting. We have all my dear colleagues, co-leads of this work track. It's Annabeth Lang, Javier Rua, and Martin Sutton with me. So I will be leading, but they will be also on the call, and hope that you can find this this summary that we have prepared useful. Before starting, let's check the agenda for today. Should I change the slides or there? Okay. Do we have any statement of interest updates? Okay, I hear none. So let me tell you, and please, Annabeth, Martin, and Javier, add any comment that you want. We have prepared some slides, and many, many thanks to staff who are great and fantastic help for our work. We have prepared some slides. We've described some sections in the document, in the draft document, that you must have received and checked. If you have seen in it, there are some highlights in different colors. So we have some colors in blue, which are some texts that we think are quite stable and agreed. But there are some comments in yellow in the document. And with that information, we have prepared some slides. There are 8 different sections of the document. So we will go one by one. In some of them, there are some already proposed texts by staff and reviewed by the co-leads, and we would like to hear your reactions to this proposed text. And in some other slides, you will see that there are still texts to be reviewed by the community, by you. So if you can give us some comments during this call, that could be great. Also, please note that major changes to the document and major comments should be done in the public comment period. So this is the last opportunity that we have to include some edits in it, but then we will have to finalize one version that will go for public comment. Before I start, I don't know if Annabeth, Martin, or Javier want to add something to my comments before I go to the slides. Okay, thank you, Javier. Fantastic. Okay, so maybe if you have the document open in another screen, that could be useful. What we have done, as I said, is taking the text that is highlighted in yellow in the main document, and I will go through the text and see the different approaches and comments from colleagues. So in page 12 of the report, it states recommendation 1. As described in recommendations 2-9, WorldCard 5 recommends, unless or until decided otherwise, maintaining the reservation of certain strings at the top level in upcoming processes to delegate a new GTLD. As described in recommendations 10-13, WorldCard 5 recommends, unless or until decided otherwise, requiring applications for certain things at the top level to be accompanied by documentation of support of non-objection from the relevant governments of public authorities as applicable. Okay, we have some comments that I will read, and then we have some suggested steps. The comments that we have are from Greg Shetton, and he says, what does applicable refer to? Greg has previously requested adding some or all after the word require in the final sentence, and he stated that this takes into account the intended use aspect. Some members had expressed discomfort with that edit and suggested adding as applicable at the end of the sentence instead. So, this is the suggestion, and we would like to receive your reactions about this suggested text. Remove as applicable and add a sentence: in these recommendations, non-capital city names only require documentation of supporting non-objection if the applicable intends to use the GTLD for purposes associated with the city name. So, I would like to open the floor and see comments, reactions from colleagues. If you think that the suggested text prepared by staff and reviewed by the colleagues is okay, if you think they have another comment. So I will open a queue now. I see Caboos and I see Greg. Caboos, the floor is yours and welcome.
Yes, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody. This thought of the term as applicable, where applicable, if applicable, this is something to escape from reality. Who decides if it's applicable or not applicable? What is the criteria to say it is applicable or is not applicable? It is one way not to implement any something saying that, yeah, if applicable. And when you go and you want to implement, they say that it is not applicable. Therefore, they don't respect that. So I have a general comment on the use of these words. Similar exactly as appropriate. These are the problems that I have with these words, these adjectives, these terms. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Caboos. Greg, go ahead. The floor is yours and welcome. Greg, can you hear me?
Thank you. Greg Shepard. Yes, I hear you. Sorry, it took a little minute to get off mute.
No, no problem.
I support the change that has suggested to get rid of the words as applicable and replaces it with something more concrete and easily understood, less ambiguous. So I support the change. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. And maybe, Caboos, if you have a suggested change, maybe you can send it once the document is published for public
comment.
First
of all, I have not heard very well what Greg said. It was the voice was too slow and too low. I didn't understand that what was the comment. Is it possible that he kindly speak a little bit more louder or closer to phone or microphone or whatever way of communication? I didn't quite hear what he said. Thank you.
If I may, Caboos, I think, and Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, you sounded low, but I did understand what you said. Greg said he was supporting the suggested text and at the bottom of the slide. Is that correct, Greg?
Yes, my question was that when you say if applicable, who decides if it is applicable or not? That was my question. Thank you.
Get rid of the words as applicable, then that solves Caboos's problem, at least this time, if you think.
So, Greg is suggesting to remove as applicable, is that correct? You sound very, very low, so this is why I'm repeating what you're saying.
Yes, I agree with that, to remove that. Thank you.
Okay. So would that be okay for you, Caboos?
Yes. Removing that, yes.
And okay, thank you very much for that. Any other comments? Okay, if staff could capture that suggested change, that would be great.
Olga?
Yes.
Olga? It's a comment from Catherine in the chat.
Catherine says, sorry, I didn't see it. I'm not good in multitasking when in front of the computer. I do not support the change by staff because this does not reflect the discussion work at 5 groups. So I would propose to delete as applicable and keep the sentence otherwise. I think this is exactly what we have just agreed. So, Catherine, if you think that's okay, say it's okay in the chat. Okay, so we have removed as applicable. Okay, any other comments? Michelle, Greg, you are needing a dialogue. I would remove. Okay. Greg, if you need a dialogue, just let us know. I see you're requesting for the floor again. It's a new hand or an old hand?
No, this is a new hand. I had my earlier comment. I said that I suggested that the I supported the staff's addition, which does reflect the where the discussion went and where the recommendation currently stands. So I disagree with the idea that we should remove the as applicable, but not take the staff suggestion.
Okay, I'm confused now. If staff can help me understanding which text are we finally having? So we want to remove as. Yeah.
It's Annabeth Lang here. Yeah. The way I have heard it now is that the staff has suggested to write something else, as suggested in the slide, instead of as applicable and remove that. Greg is fine with that, but Catherine is not. She thinks it's fine to remove as applicable, but she doesn't want it to be subsidized with something else. So it's still some discrepancies here, and we not agree on everything. If that is that's the way I understood it.
This is what I got, but I thought that we were agreeing in removing as applicable. Okay, let's cut through all these comments and see how we can reflect them in documents with different views.
Hey, Olga,
and remember,
do you mind if I...
Who's there?
This is Steve from staff. I have my hand up, and you might not see it sitting up the top there.
Yes, please.
Thanks. So, again, this is Steve Chan from staff, and to just hopefully parse through the comments here and discussion here. And to note that, so I guess originally what I think Greg was trying to differentiate here is that in recommendations 10 through 13, three of the four always require support or non-objection, and there's one where it's dependent on usage. And so that's why there's this appended language at the end that says as applicable. And so I think what the staff suggestion is intended to do is just to remove the ambiguity of something like as applicable and to make it clear that this refers to non-capital cities where documentation is only required when it's intended to be used for the purposes associated with a city name. So I'm not sure if what Katrine's concern here might be. I'm hoping she might be able to articulate what the specific concern is. But the staff suggestion is really just to help to try to provide clarity and differentiation between the different types of recommendations in 10 through 13. Hopefully that's helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Catherine, I see Martin is also asking for clarification. If you can clarify what the suggested sentence does not reflect the deliberation. Okay, she said.
She's okay.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so if I don't see Paul, you want to add something to this slide, to comments in page 12? The floor is yours, and welcome.
Thank you. Paul McGrady here for the record. So I think if we're going to change it from as applicable, which I agree, you know, isn't the world's most clear, we got to be clear on what we're going to change it to. So, for example, when we say using it for the purposes of the city, I think we need to figure out what that means, right? So are we talking there about using it for the purposes of pretending to be the city, like pretending to be the city government? Are we talking about or using it for some other purposes that are not related to the official functions of a city, but they may be applicable? You know, it may be a geographic reference, but it's not misleading. So if we're going to make a change like that and get into the weeds, I think we'd like to, at least I would like to see what the language is that staff proposes so that we make sure that it's sharp enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. The comment is well taken. Robin, the floor is yours. Welcome.
Robin? Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Welcome.
Can you hear me? Great, thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to build upon what Paul had just said. And, you know, in terms of what we're talking about, what kind of conduct we're talking about appropriate, I think if we can change it to something that says that prohibits misrepresentation, you know, I think that would really go to the heart of the harm that we're trying to prevent in this case. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Robin. Alan, welcome. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I think both of those last suggestions are not doing what the original language was doing. City TLDs come in a lot of different forms. Some of them are run by the city government and you know, are clearly run, you know, clearly part of the formal government. Others are run completely independently as a resource associated with the city. And I don't think we can presume a city TLD is one form or another. So the wording that was proposed is associated with the city name is I think pretty close to what the original intent was. That is, associated with the city name and construed as the city. To use the example I used in the last call, if you want to use, you know, dot Milano, and you're only talking about a rather nice cookie that's available in the U.S., that's not pretending to be the city name. If you're talking about a resource associated with the city of Milan, whether it's to attract businesses to have TLDs or people to have their own personal ones because they're proud of where they live, then it's a city TLD, and it's using the name in association with its meaning as a city name, as opposed to having some other unrelated meaning. So I don't think we can presume a single type of city TLD, and associated with it may not be the clearest words, but it's pretty close to what I think the intent was.
Thank you very much, Alan. I think we have to move forward because we won't have that much time. We have captured all your comments, and we will work with
Olga.
Yes, Steve, go ahead.
Thanks. This is Steve again from staff. And so I guess I just wanted to place a little context around what this recommendation. So this is the very first recommendation in the series of preliminary recommendations. And essentially what it's doing is summarizing at a high level the more detailed recommendations that ensue after that. So how about this as a suggestion? So rather than trying to recreate the language related to non-capital city names, what we could do is reference the relevant recommendation, which in this case I believe is 11. So either we can specifically reference that recommendation, or we can that is my suggestion, to actually reference the recommendation rather than trying to recreate it, because it seems to have stirred up a bit of conversations and hornet's nest here by trying to recreate it. So rather than do that, how about we reference the recommendation instead? Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. I agree that it's a good recommendation. I see Justin saying plus one, and let's have that in mind. I suggest that we move forward, because if not, we will not have enough time to review all the suggested texts and have your comments. I have don't know what happens with the slides. I will go to slide number 6. I am moving it with myself. On top of the page, it says recommendations, page 16. So this is where we are now. So in page 16 of the document, it says, I'm trying to check the chat. Okay, slide 6 now. In preliminary recommendation 8, there is currently a sentence. It says, permutations and transpositions of alpha 3 codes listed in the ISO 3166-1 standard should be allowed. So there is a comment from Justin Chu suggest changing this sentence to strings resulting from permutations and transposition of alpha 3 codes listed in the ISO 3166-1 standard should be allowed. And Justin said, after all, will no longer be alpha 3 codes. So it's a reference, if we change the permutation, it will not be the alpha 3 codes. And then there's a note from staff saying this can be changed in the work cut if the working group agrees. Note that the original text mirrors the way the 2012 applicant guidebook referred to permutations and transpositions. So this is somehow reflecting what the applicant guidebook referred to in 2012. And let's see if we have comments about this suggested, this comment from Justin. Reactions, comments about this after if we change if we change the order of the letters, it will no longer be a specific code. I see no hands. I see some comments in the chat in pink. I think it's Robin. I'm trying to follow up if there's something relevant to this slide. Okay. Any comments about this? We are in slide 6, and it says recommendations page 16. If you go to the document, you will see some comments in the right in yellow that are copy-pasted in this slide. Steve, you have comments? Please go ahead.
Thanks, Olga. This is Steve Chan from staff again. And just to provide a little more context, and Justine can correct me if I get this wrong, but I believe just for folks on the call to get a better understanding, I believe it's just a technical point to say that once you actually have a permutation of an ISO 3166-1 alpha 3 code, permutation or transposition of that code would then no longer be an actual part of the ISO 3166-1 standard. So I don't know if that helps, but hopefully provide a little context. And Justine, if I got that wrong, please let me know. Thanks.
Yeah, you're correct, Steve. And I see some virtual nodding in the chat. Let's see if there is a stronger position to it. There's an agreement. Annabeth says, then it will be just another three-letter combination, not on the ISO list. Any comments, any other comments about slide 6, about recommendations in page 16? It specifically talks about recommendation 8. Okay, I see none, so let's move forward. I will go to slide 7. And it refers to page 33 in the document, and I will read.
Excuse me, this page?
What is in? Sorry, was there?
Hello.
Okay. Hello. Who's there, Caboose? Okay. I cannot realize who wants to talk. Okay, we're in slide 7. Deliberations page 33. There's a bullet surface by some believe that state, national, and local law providing protection for geographic names does not give government rights beyond those of other stakeholders in the context of the new GTLD program, including the application process. National and local laws only apply in the jurisdiction where the applicant is located. Therefore, Work Card 5 should look
Hi, everyone. This is Steve from staff. I actually don't see Olga on the AC room. I think we might have lost her. We can give her a moment to try to reconnect, and then...
Should I take over, Steve? Is Annabeth here? I can take this page while we're waiting for her to save some time.
Sure. Sure, that'd be great. Or staff also help you to step in as well.
Yeah. Okay. So we go through page 33 in the deliberations. That we have a bullet prefaced by some believe that state, national, and local law providing protection for geographic names does not give government rights. Olga, are you back again?
I don't know what happened. Just internet.
Okay,
cuddle.
Come on. You can continue.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Our apologies for that. So it's light. I'm lost. Light.
Slide 7.
7, and it's on page 33. Apologies for that. I think you're in the best for catching up. So, I cannot move that. So we have, I cannot think my, yeah. So we have a comment from Anne-Catherine Markussen, and she says the question of jurisdiction. Wait, I will go to my... This never fails. The question of jurisdiction and the applicable law of national law is much more complicated than stated in this bullet point, and I suggest that it should be modified. It is not given that it will always be the national law of the applicant that will be applicable in a possible legal dispute concerning a part of an application of a next round GTLD stream. And then we have a suggested text from staff, added as a footnote in the document that says, some believe that the question of jurisdiction and the applicability of national law is more complicated than stated in this bullet point. From this perspective, it is not given that it will always be the national law of the applicant that will be applicable in a possible legal dispute concerning a part of an application of for a new next round GTLD stream. So, reactions and comments about the suggested footnote that somehow brings clarity to this this text in page 33, and I see Paul requesting for the floor. Paul, the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you, Paul McGrady here. I'm sorry, but I was talking over someone.
Yeah, this is Christopher. I'll ask for the floor after Paul.
Oh, okay. Sure. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Paul,
so, thank you. So, thanks. Hi, guys. This is Paul McGrady again. So regarding Anne Catherine's comment, it's important to see the three words in front of that dot, though, where it says, some believe that. I can tell from her comment that she has a different belief, but the bullet point is specifically predicated on the notion that some believe that national and local laws providing for protection for geographic names, et cetera. So this is not made as a statement of law or fact, but simply a statement of what some people believe is the case. And so I don't think we need to edit this at the last minute. I think it's fine the way it is because of the way it's predicated. I happen to believe what the bullet point says, but the bullet point isn't written in a way that says that we all believe it to be true or we've conducted some sort of factual analysis and have concluded that it's true. Thanks.
Paul, if I'm understanding you right, you think that this footnote is not needed?
That's right, because I think that the concern, the way I'm reading it is Anne Catherine's concern is that there is a different view that's not contained in the bullet point, and the predicate, some believe that, that is just above the bullet point makes it clear that there may in fact be a different view because we say some believe that instead of everybody believes that or it's, you know, it's a known fact that we say some believe that. So clearly, you know, the concern that Anne has I think has already been addressed in the way that we have the draft report phrased, so I wouldn't change anything at this point. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. I have Christopher, Caboose, and then Annabeth. Christopher, the floor is yours. and welcome.
And thank you. Thank you. This is going to be rather stumbly because I cannot get through to the Adobe site, so I cannot see the text that we're discussing. But it is a fact that in some countries, geographical names are protected by local law. And the starting point is that ICANN has to respect that. There is a second level where even in those countries where there is no law protecting them, I think it is incumbent on ICANN community to protect the interests of the populations who live in those areas to recognize their rights to the use of the names of their places. But it's as simple as that. We don't need to have anything about believing this or believing that in a final text. The question of jurisdiction is distinct. I've said all along that the registries operating TLDs for geographical names should be registered, should be incorporated in the jurisdictions of that name. What the ADB text said was that a registry should respond of the country of its incorporation. Well, we know from history that a large number of registries are incorporated in places like the United States, like Canada, like Gibraltar, like some European countries. That's irrelevant. Operation has to be in the country in the jurisdiction of the name itself. Otherwise, we're going to go straight into the problem that we had years ago with CCTLDs, which had been incorporated outside the countries for which the name referred. I'm not prepared to go into that whole history again in the GTLD sphere. Incorporation is in the country of the name. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher. Before giving the floor to Caboose, Annabeth, and Robin, Catherine wrote a comment. She said, I would prefer to add the proposed sentence from Anka Twain's comment after the sentence starting with others, instead of adding it as a footnote to keep the balance in the discussion. Thank you, Catherine. Caboose, the floor is yours.
Yes, my view is more or less the same as the previous speaker, but in the other sense. We are writing something that will be used as a guide in future. Mentioning something, some believe that doesn't help at all. What does it mean, some believe that? Some other does not believe that. So it is not helpful. If we say, as Wilkinson mentioned, that in some country this is a situation, this is a narration, this is some statement of some countries, but we don't care of the belief of people. Some believe this, some believe that. Would not be helpful at all. So I am not in favor of this sort of polarization. But if you want to state that in some country or some area or some location, this is the prevailing situation, I have no problem. If you could give an example, so much, so better. If not, but some believe that and some does not believe that, would not be helpful at all, so I'm not in favor of that addition. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gabu. And remember that we are trying to have a text that will go for public comment. So, Annabeth, the floor is yours.
Annabeth Langer for the record. I would say the same, that we are here on the last time now before we send out the initial report. And what we are trying to do now and what the staff has suggested is that those comments coming in the last 2 weeks after we sent it out last time is just put it in footnotes when it's deliberations. It doesn't make any harm, but we shouldn't discuss all the deliberate points now. We have to move on, and please let us go through the slides now and put the comments that we have had in as footnotes in the deliberations. Then it can show that some means one thing and others will mean something else. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Annabeth. You read my mind. Robin, who is you? Robin?
He's on mute. There it is.
Great. Thank you very much. I also don't think we need to edit this particular... Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Okay. I don't think we need to edit this text. I think this bullet is okay the way it ends, and I think that the suggested text edit, the footnote, actually adds more confusion to the issue and actually seems to be a little bit questionable simply as a statement of law. I mean, for us to say that the national law of the applicant won't apply seems to be a very dangerous statement for us to be opining and interpreting. Yeah, it seems to be, frankly, incorrect as a matter of law. I think maybe what the point they're trying to make is that it may not, that the national law may not be the only law that applies. There may be others that apply. But again, I think, see how this is just adding more confusion about what it is we're trying to say. And I think the way it had originally been written, which was prefaced by some believe that, is much more clearer and doesn't add this confusion and, you know, dangerous statement about what law doesn't apply people on in the TLD process. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Brett?
Well, I'm not confused, but okay.
Greg, you want to say something, or can you want me to read your comment?
That's Greg Chatton, for the record. Okay, hopefully that will work better. What I was going to suggest is just trying to revise the footnote slightly, which might get rid of some of the confusion that it creates, and begin it with some others disagree, comma, and believe, etc. Since while we may not agree with their belief, and I can tell Robin doesn't, and I really not sure I do either, but again, they're entitled to their beliefs, but again, we have to distinguish between the some who believing in the text and the some believing in the footnote who are a different some. So that's my suggestion, to try to split the baby on this particular point, so that the point gets in there somewhere but is not muddled with the point with which it is disagreeing. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. And I have some comments in the chat from Paul. Why not encourage the footnote makers to make them as public comments instead? And also there's another comment. Primary concern from Paul also, all of the footnotes make a difficult document even more difficult to read. It won't be clear to reader who the footnote maker is. Thank you very much, Paul, for that. Greg, it's a new hand or an old hand? It may be an old hand. So I will go to, thank you for that, I will go to page, I cannot move the... The slide, I want to go to the, thank you very much. I want to go to slide 8, and it refers to deliberations in page 34. And remember that these are deliberations, not recommendations. And I will read the text. Bullet prefaced by some believe that state monopolization of a city name by private parties is forbidden under laws pertaining to business name and trademark registration in some jurisdictions. On the word monopolization reads, so there's an issue about this specific term monopolization. One World Truck member stated that this is a term with a specific meaning in antitrust competition law, and it is not used properly in this context. Note that the point is written as expressed by another work track member, and therefore the initial report seeks to reflect the point as it was read. So comments from Justin Chu. Justin says, how about just exclusive use of a city name? If change considered too drastic, then it's okay with a footnote. And then Anne-Catherine McCusen, she says, I suggest to add which jurisdiction this word has specific legal meaning in the text or in the footnote, so that it becomes clear that the word monopolization that may have another legal meaning in, for example, European legislation. So there's a comment. If there is any agreement in the working group about what changes should be made to the above text, if we want to make any change at this point. And please remember that we have to be concise so we can agree in a text and send it to public comments. And I will open floor now for comments. So the issue is about using the word monopolization. I see no reaction. We want some feedback from you. Greg, go ahead.
Sorry, technical difficulties. Greg Shatton for the record. I just wanted to say that to my knowledge of European competition law, monopolization means the same thing as it means in the competition law of other jurisdictions, and that competition law is fairly well harmonized. Obviously differs from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but I don't think that there is some example in European legislation where it means something different than it means in European competition legislation. It's too bad that Anne Catherine isn't here to represent her point of view, but there's nothing here other than some vague claim that it might mean something different in some law. And again, I've practiced antitrust law for a number of years and before I stopped. And at that point in time, monopolization meant just about the same thing everywhere in the world. So maybe things have changed, but if so, I think the burden is on Anne Catherine to tell us how it's changed. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Any other comments about using monopolization? Alexander says, this isn't about competition law. This isn't about laws at all. City communities need to be heard. Thank you, Alexander. Paul, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Paul McGrady, for the record. So this is a great example of taking my own medicine. So for the word monopolization, as Greg mentions, has a meaning within competition law, but it may have a meaning outside of competition law in this particular circumstance because it doesn't sound like we're talking about cornering a market, but rather imposing some law of some jurisdiction to the use of city names as business names or trademark registrations. I've never seen anybody come forward with anything to support this notion, but again, the idea here is that we are trying to elicit responses to this, and this bullet point, even though I disagree with it, is prefaced with the idea, if we look up on the prior page, page 33 at the bottom, some believe that, right? So I don't think we need to mess with this bullet point. I don't agree with what the bullet point says, but it is prefaced with some believe that. So I don't think we need a bunch of footnotes and comments and other things that are going to confuse the reader. The reader can simply react to the fact that some believe that monopolization of a city name by private parties, et cetera. And again, rather than trying to cram all this stuff in at the last minute and create a document that's already hard to read to make it worse by adding all these footnotes, I think really is going to make the document very difficult to plow through. And again, this is not a statement of law. It's not a statement of fact. It's not even a statement that all of WorkTrack 5 agrees with this. It's just a statement that some of us happen to think that this is an accurate statement. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. I have a comment from Robbie. Isn't it the use of the domain name and monopolization in some sense? Okay, so I will move to the next slide. I cannot move, so please, Steve, if you can go to number 9. You have a lot of text to review still. So this is also about page 34, and it says, would it preface by some believe that state rights granted to geographic locations to protect geographic names are qualitatively different and different than intellectual property rights. In this view, civil rights are more general in scope and therefore more significant. So there are comments from colleagues, and Catherine Markussen, she says, I am not sure I understand the point of adding the last sentence. I suggest that the sentence should be put into a separate bullet point to better separate the meaning of the original statement from the suggested one. And Greg says, suggested edit, in this view, rights granted to geographic locations to protect geographic names are civil rights, and civil rights are more general in scope and therefore more significant. So suggesting from staff, it's an edit attempting to incorporate both comments that I have just read. So these are the two bullet points at the bottom of the slide. Rights granted to geographic locations to protect geographic names are civil rights, which are qualitatively different than intellectual property rights. And the other bullet point, civil rights are more general in scope than intellectual property rights and therefore more significant. Comments? Reaction? So the two texts try to incorporate the comments above and retaining the original meaning. Okay, see no reaction? I assume that I take silence as a yes. Let's go to number 10. It's about page 35 and 36. And there are, if I'm not mistaken, these are three slides about the same issue. So original text, TLDs are unique resource. Some WorkTrack members have contrasted this unique quality of TLDs with the use of names under trademark law. From this perspective, under trademark law, the principles of specialty and of trademark fair use apply, according to which it is possible for two brands to register trademarks for the same term in the same jurisdiction as long as no confusion or infringement pursuant to the laws arises. In this view, the DNS is different because parallel use is not possible. In other words, if a string corresponding to a geographic term is delegated to one party, others who have an interest in that string are prevented from using it potentially for a significant period of time or permanently. So there are some comments. Greg Shetton raised concerns about the accuracy of this text and proposed edits. Jorge Cancio proposed additional edits to the text. And then Greg proposed additional footnotes. And in the next slide, we can show you some adjusted text. So see if you can go to 11. So we will be in slide 11. Thank you so much. So this is a continuation of the previous text. So it is amended, and it has some footnotes, as you can see. 1, 2, 3, and 4. 1 and 2 are in the slide 11, and 3 and 4 are in the slide 12. So I will read again the text, and then we will go to the footnotes. The new text says, TLDs are unique resource. Some WorkTrack members have contrasted this unique quality of TLDs with the use of names under trademark law. From this perspective, under trademark law, a sign is always registered in relation to certain goods or and/or services, principal specialty, in brackets, so it is possible for two brands to register trademarks for the same term in the same jurisdiction, as long as no confusion or infringement pursuant to the law arises. Then it's footnote 1 that says some WorkTrack members, so please look below in the number 1. Some WorkTrack members believe that it would be a more accurate reflection of the law to state under trademark law it is possible for two brands to register trademarks for the same term in the same jurisdiction for unrelated goods and services as long as no confusion or infringement pursuant to the law arises. In addition, mechanisms exist in domestic trademark laws to allow third parties to use descriptive terms
like, for instance, geographic terms, which are generally descriptive for the origin of goods and services. So I will read footnotes 2, 3, and 4 now. 2 says, certain jurisdictions apply a disclaimer on descriptive terms. The fair use exception used in certain jurisdictions allows a trademarker word or phrase to be used by a third party in a non-trademark sense as a descriptor of the third party's goods or services of their geographic origin. Under other jurisdictions, the protection granted by trademark law does simply not extend to descriptive terms. And footnotes 3 and 4, I have printed them here. I don't know if we can show them. Can we go to slide 12? Please. 3 and 4 says, 3 says, with regard to the prior footnote, some WorkTrack members believe that it would be a more accurate reflection of the law to state certain jurisdictions may require a disclaimer in a trademark registration when a descriptive term is used generically as an element of the mark. Also, some WorkTrack members believe that it would be a more accurate reflection of the law to state in other jurisdictions the protection granted by trademark law does simply not extend to descriptive terms when used in connection with the goods and on services they describe. However, trademark protection may be extended to a descriptive term when it acquires distinctiveness through the use and promotion of the brand. And footnote 4, yes, some WorkTrack members believe that it would be a more accurate reflection of the law to say. In addition, mechanisms exist in domestic trademark laws to allow third parties to use descriptive terms in a non-trademark sense. Like, for instance, geographic terms, which are geographically descriptive when the goods or services originate from that place, the place is generally known to be public, and the public would make an association between the goods or services and the place named in the mark, even if these terms are part of a registered trademark. So these are the 4 footnotes. And I will go back to the text, the final part of the text that is written in slide 11. It says, so after all these footnotes, even if these terms are part of a registered trademark in this view, the DNS is different because parallel use is not possible. In other words, if a string corresponding to a geographic term is delegated to one party, others who have an interest in that string are prevented from using it, potentially for a significant period of time or permanently. So this is a new text with 4 footnotes that are quite descriptive and have somehow around the same concept, different way of expressing them. So I would like to see your reactions, to hear your reactions about this proposed new text. Christopher, the floor is yours.
Good evening, everybody. At the 20th attempt, I think I have logged on to Adobe, thanks to at least one, if not 2, restarts. Sorry to... Look, on this particular question, I don't think this report should enter into an interpretation of trademark law at all. We are not, as we would say in French, competent. I'm sure that there are some trademark experts on the call, but frankly, the interpretation of trademark law is totally irrelevant in this context. The basic fact that we have to deal with is that the top-level domain is unique. That's for technical reasons, which some people historically have regretted, but as far as I know, nobody has found a technical solution to do things differently. A top-level domain is unique. This, incidentally, applies to trademarks as well. Whatever the arrangements are for trademarks to subsist in parallel markets, that doesn't work in the DNS. The reason... Since the top-level domain is unique, this is the principal reason why non-geographic use of a geographical term needs to have the approval and non-opposition of the geography concerned, because it also prevents that community or that region or that country even from using the name for its own geographical purposes in the future. So it is the uniqueness of the DNS TLD structure that imposes upon us that the geographical community concerned must have a say in all uses of its name on the internet. Thank you. But I think you can delete nearly everything that has been said about the attempt to interpret trademark law in this text. It's not relevant for this document. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other comments about this new text and the four footnotes? Greg Chetan, Greg, go ahead. Go with you.
It's Greg Chetan for the record. On one level, I agree with Christopher. I think this whole section gets us into the weeds. Certainly not my preferred. The solution that's in front of you now is not my preferred solution, but it's basically the negotiated solution. I just, you know, felt that there were factual misstatements about trademark law that were, you know, couldn't just sit there. But one solution is to follow Christopher's lead and basically cut everything after the first two sentences and before the last two sentences. So it just reads, TLDs are a unique resource. Some work track members have contrasted the unique quality of TLDs with the use of names under trademark law. In this view, the DNS is different because parallel use is not possible. In other words, blah, blah, blah. And then we get away from anything about what trademark law actually says. I think that would that may be preferable to what's here, which is, you know, if a camel is a horse designed by a committee, this is a this is even worse. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I wrote it.
Thank you very much. Okay, so we have two proposals of making it shorter and more to the point. So I hope that staff captured those comments. Okay, so Annabeth agrees with Greg, and I somehow agree. But the issue is that the text has been trying to reflect the different views and the different opinions about perhaps the same issue. Okay, so we have now we go to slide 13, because 12 we already reviewed. Robin says that she agrees with Greg. So we have some agreement in the comments made by Christine and Greg. So I hope that staff capture that. Greg, this is a new hand or an old hand? Old hand. Okay, thank you. Okay, we have deliberations, page 50 and 51. My document printed is slightly different. So these are a series of bullet points regarding the future treatment of Alpha 3 code. And the report has more details, but I will read the comments and some suggested bullet points in the next slide. So some comments about this issue are, and Catherine Markusen says, based on the discussions we have had, and I suggest to add a separate bullet point, something like a larger map of if not almost all countries, nations have political, cultural, and societal, or even legal reasons for the need to be in charge of the use of Alpha 3 code. It also just suggests to reflect somewhere in this section the view taken by some World Track members that the principle of subsidiary sovereignty should be applied to the potential use of this three-letter code. Even if there are no legal rights, there are other kinds of rights like political, territorial, and local needs. And then there are comments from Greg Chetan. If these points are added, the following counterpoints need to be added as well. One, other World Track members question the validity of this extensive claim made without evidence, particularly as it regards TLD. Two, the principle of subsidiary sovereignty is not a principle of ICANN policy making. The question of whether and how this would ever be applied to ICANN policy and the extent to which they are consistent or inconsistent with ICANN policy making is beyond the scope of this discussion. And then we have more comments in the next slide. So Steve, if you can, because I cannot scroll the slides, can you go to 14, please? Staff suggestion to add the following bullets to the relevant sections. And if you want to see where they are in the report, you have to refer to the report. So each of these bullets is prefaced by some believe that, have that in mind when I read, some believe that a large number of, if not almost all countries, nations, have political, cultural, and societal or even legal reasons for the need to be in charge of the use of the ASA 3 code. Following, some believe that, regarding the point, a large number of, if not almost all countries, nations, have political, cultural, and societal or even legal reasons for the need to be in charge of the use of the ASA 3 code. Some World Track members question the validity of this claim, particularly as it regards to TLDs, and invite World Track members to provide supporting evidence. And then the other one, some believe that the principle of subsidiary sovereignty should be applied to a potential use of this ASA 3 code. And finally, some believe that the principle of subsidiary sovereignty is not a principle of ICANN policy making. The question of whether and how this would be applied to ICANN policy and the extent to which they are consistent or inconsistent with ICANN policy making is beyond the scope of this discussion. So these bullet points are added in the text trying to reflect the comments made by colleagues. Comments, reactions. I open the floor for your feedback. I see none, so I take silence as a yes. So let's go to in slide 15. I think it's the last comment in the document that is marked with yellow. As we said at the beginning, the yellow means that we still need some working with the text. Thank you, Javier. Here is no comment. Okay, so page 17. There's a proposal 32 that says, apply a clear and unambiguous rule that any geographic term that is not explicitly and expressly protected is unprotected. I will read that again. Apply a clear and ambiguous rule that any geographic term that is not explicitly and expressly protected is unprotected. No objection or non-consent can be used to stop its delegation. So we have comments. Justin Chu, I'm not comfortable with this sentence. Are we not taking only about letters of supporting non-objection and application? There are still strings, confusion, etc. to be considered. Suggest replacing it with a lack of letter of support non-objection alone will not be a cause to suspend, hinder or suspend an application for such unprotected terms. And there are comments from Alexander Schubert, suggested altering the proposal to state proposal apply a clear and an unambiguous rule that any geographic term that is not explicitly and expressly impacted by geographic name review is unprotected. No objection or non-consent can be used to stop its registration. He claims that the current version of the proposal would eliminate the right to object to non-capital city name-based CTLD applications that do not require a letter of non-objection, making it impossible for vulnerable city communities to defend their GTLD namespace against GTLD squatting, extortion, and abuse. So, your feedback about this comment and that the author of this proposal is welcome because we should propose edits. I have Christopher in the queue. Christopher, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Christopher Wilkinson for the record. I also commented on this very specifically in email to the list, and I'm disappointed that my comments have not been included, although I respect and generally agree with Justine's and Alexander's points. This proposal does not merit being included in this document. On the one hand, I've never seen a reference to the author, although I missed one or two calls recently. I've never participated in a discussion on the call for such a proposal. And from the point of view of the people and the authorities in very large numbers of geographical places and areas, the proposal is outrageous, ridiculous. You can't tell almost the whole of the world that none of their names are protected unless they happen to be large cities or in the ISO 3166 list. It's absurd. Please don't waste our time about this. This will go down in flames when it's reviewed and revealed to the world at large. Don't make things even more difficult than they are.
Thank you, Christopher. Greg, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Greg Shatton for the record. I think that this could be changed, although Alexander's change is very opaque, the references to the geographic names review. I think we should refer to the strings that are included in the AGB rather than saying, rather than explicitly, expressly protected, just say that any geographic term that is not protected in the AGB is unprotected for purposes. I'll just leave it there. I don't think this does not preclude legal action, so it's not taking any law. It's not nullifying any outside law. We don't have the power to do that. This is really just about internal processes. So the idea is that there are protected strings and then there's everything else from the point of view of what goes on within the ICANN structure. And I think by pointing back to the strings themselves, we do include the city names that are subject to the intended use carve-out, no matter what the application is. So I think that would do what Alexander is looking for, but would have a less, be a little more clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Before giving the floor to Annabeth, Catherine says that she agrees with the proposal text by Justine. Annabeth, the floor is yours.
It's Annabeth Lang for the record. I just actually have a question for Greg. And do you mean to say by your suggestion that it should not be any internal objection procedure if someone register a name that's not in the AGB, it should be no possible way to object within the ICANN system, only external legal system? Is that what you meant?
Thanks for the question. It's probably a little narrower than that. It shouldn't be an objection on geographic grounds within the ICANN system.
Okay.
If there's some other reason to object, then that's okay, but just not on geographic grounds within the ICANN system.
It's just good to have your view visualized so I can see it, understand it. Thank you for your input.
Thank you, Annabeth and Greg. I have comments from Justin in the chat. She says, while I don't necessarily agree with the first sentence in Proposal 32, I know that it is a proposal, so I'm more concerned with the second sentence because it is not correct. Catherine says, supporting Justin, and also does not properly reflect our debate. Greg, this is an old hand.
Yes. Old hand, sorry.
No worries. Any other comments? Okay, hearing none, I thank you very much for all the comments about this pending issue to be redrafted. I am sure that staff has taken good notes. I took some notes as well. So we have no any other business. Do we have any comments? Is someone talking?
Olga, Steve has his hands up.
Oh, yes, you're right. I was reading my notes. Steve, please, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Olga. Thanks, Annabeth. This is Steve from staff. And I think we might have left some of these sort of open, so I just want to try to run through the various edits and try to see if we are generally in agreement with where we are ending up. Because at least from a staff side, who need to make some of these edits and suggest it to the group, more clarity the better, of course. So I'm just going to back us up here and walk us through quickly. So for this one, hopefully you are able to remember in context the discussion about these. This was about the remove inapplicable and then add in more clarity. So the suggestion here was to, rather than try to rewrite the text about non-capital cities, we would reference the relevant recommendation, which in this case was 11. Any objection to that? See none. Or hear none. In this case, there seemed to be agreement with Justine's comment. It's about the adjustment to, or I guess the technical point, that once you have a permutation or transposition, it's no longer in ISO 3166-1 code. See no objections. So there was quite a bit of discussion about this one. Sorry, does someone want to speak?
No.
Okay, I thought I heard someone trying to get in the queue. So for this one, as I was trying to say, there's quite a bit of debate about whether or not, as an overall approach, I guess, we want to try to include counterpoints, especially as footnotes. I think the staff inclination here is just to actually, in fact, include the footnote. It seems hopefully less harmful to include it rather than to exclude it. This is definitely one of the ones where we didn't seem to get agreement on the conversation and discussion here, but at least from staff side, it seems less harmful to actually just include it and, you know, let the reader be the judge of what they actually agree with. So this is definitely one I wanted to bring up again and see if there's agreement to just hopefully allow the footnote to remain. Anyone ready to die in a ditch for this one? Okay. Seems that that's okay. This one, I believe we had settled on, at least in the chat, to substitute the word monopolization for the words exclusive use instead. That would seem to get rid of the issue that Marcuson had noted. So I think a simple swap of monopolization for exclusive use could work here. And apologies for the noise in the background. I'm getting a new garage door installed. Is there any objections to that approach? I don't know if we have or not, Greg. I don't know if we've reached that point, but I thought it useful to try to use our phrase here. Okay, moving on. See no objections there. I have to remind myself which one this was. I don't believe there's any objections to the staff suggestion edits here, so I think that we're okay here. In this case, I believe there was a suggestion from Greg to cut the middle part of the Actually, let me just move forward a little bit. Ah, here it is. So there's a suggestion from Greg to cut a substantial amount of the text in front. So I think it's the first two sentences and the last two sentences that we would retain. So there is some level of agreement in the chat. So I'll just bring it up here verbally. Is there any objections to Greg's suggestion? Seeing and hearing none, moving on. Actually, that would also, just to point out, would remove the footnotes as well. Page 50, so this one, I don't believe there was any objections to this one. And then finally here, I believe there was agreement to amend the second sentence to what Justine suggested.
Yes.
And I think that actually includes it. Any suggestions or comments or objections? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve. Before we close the call, highlights of the update and the next steps for the document and public comments and about the timeline. Can you hear me?
Sorry, Olga. There was quite a bit of cross noise, I guess. So I think you're.
Now,
in this case, it wasn't my.
Some updates about timelines and what are the next steps for, in terms of when is the document will be published for public comments and all that.
Sure. So based on the, thanks Olga, this is Steve Chan for the record. So based on the summary of edits that we expect, I think we should be able to turn those around pretty quickly. And then as I think Paul had asked in the AC room chat, we'll certainly make those redline edits available to the work track to consider and to make sure that they agree with what we have changed and how we have changed it. So the intention is then to try to publish the report sometime next week, pursuant to there not being any substantive objections to the suggested edits. So those are next steps in anticipated timing. I'm not sure if you want anything else, Olga. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Steve. I don't know if Annabeth, Martin, or Javier want to add something. Final comments?
No final from me. It's Annabeth.
Thank you, Annabeth. I take silence as a no, I don't want to comment. Okay, so any other comments from colleagues? Thank you, Martin. Okay, thank you, Javier. Thank you, everyone. It has been a very intense and productive call. Thank you very much, Steve, and thank you, Olga.
Olga, it's Annabeth. Just one more thing that we haven't talked about the NAOD business with the additional information request for geographic names panel. I think we should say a few words about that as well. Could you say something about that, Steve?
Okay, Steve.
Sure, thanks, Annabeth. Thanks, Annabeth. Thanks, Olga. This is Steve from staff again. So work track members might recall that I believe in Barcelona, there was a request to inquire with the GeoNames panel whether or not they utilize a definition for non-capital city name for the purposes of conducting the geographic names panel review. So as we had noted in the email, if you guys remember, what our conclusion was, and this was staff research, policy staff in conjunction with discussion with our GDD colleagues, our understanding, as the AGB notes, is that there is not a definition that is used. And so we are nearly certain that that is the case. However, there was a quest from Jorge to still inquire with the panel whether or not that is indeed the case. So I guess to the extent that there is concern about whether or not staff got that understanding right, we can indeed ask the panel, if I guess, to confirm our findings. That said, where we are at this point, as noted, our intention at this point is to try to publish the supplemental initial report. And so I think, you know, even if we were to reach out at this point, it would not actually impact the initial report. So the suggestion at this point from staff is to simply park this one for now, and we can perhaps revisit after the initial report is published. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Steve. So we are almost finishing the call. Thank you all very much for your participation. Thank you very much to Steve, Julie, and Emily for their fantastic support and work, and also to Terry. And thank you, colleagues. Thank you to my dear colleagues in the work track, and see you all somewhere in the cyberspace. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Olga. Bye-bye.
Ciao. Ciao.
And once again, thank you for joining. If you could please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye.